everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And I'm Alan.
We run ReverseThieves.com, an anime and manga blog and podcast site, where you can get 3+ blog posts every week, as well as various other podcasts, including our seasonal SWAT reviews, where we look at the first episode of a bunch of new shows of the season. And of course, you can get all the old episodes of the monthly Speakeasy Podcast there as well.
And if you have any questions or comments or show topics, please email them to us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter. I'm HisuiRT.
And I'm NarutakiRT.
And if you like this podcast or any other thing that we do, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It helps us go up in the ranks and contact new listeners. Let's check in with what's new on the blog this month.
My manga of the month this time around is Isabella Bird in Wonderland, and it's based on the actual historical figure, Isabella Bird, who was a travel writer in the late 1800s. And she traveled in all places all over the world, but this is about her travels through Japan, through kind of more of the less populated areas and up into meeting the Ainu. So the manga that I reviewed is, I have never read her actual writings, so I don't know, you know, how accurate to her experience, but it's supposed to be based on her actual book from her travels in Japan.
So two quick questions. Is there a sequel that's Isabella Wanda in Birdland? And my second question is, do they get up to the part where she has to start hunting escaped convicts to get their skins to find the golden treasure?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. I was a little worried.
It was the second half of volume one.
I was a little worried they wouldn't get up. If you like horrible puns like that and other stuff.
I don't.
Maybe you should read my Anime Next coverage on the blog. I went to Anime Next, and we'll be talking a little bit about it here. But I also have some of my thoughts on the convention, as well as an interview with Aramaki.
Coming up, of course, is the end of another anime season. So you will start seeing many a case-closed review. Been watching quite a bit of shows from the season, so you'll see a lot. And of course, that means SWAT reviews for a new season. So lots of podcasts in the next month of the summer. And also, don't forget to check out our Record of Lotus War rewatch podcast. We have a few episodes out already, and we're just chugging along.
Ongoing investigations. What we've been reading, watching, and playing.
All right, so instead of doing our usual format this time around, since both me and Al went on trips to, you know, do some interesting stuff, we're going to spend our time talking about ourselves. It's our favorite thing. So the first half is dedicated to Al, and then the second half will be my turn. So Al, okay, went to Anime Next 2018 down in Atlantic City here on the East Coast. So this is the third year?
They had been, as you remember, they were getting really crowded. In their previous, at the Somerset, they kept having to, like, take up different hotels, which made it, like, you know, the convention was split out among four hotels, and you had to walk in between them, and people wouldn't know which, you know, the panels had to be separated into two separate hotels, and people wouldn't know which hotel panels were at. There were a whole bunch of people who didn't even know there was, like, a video game room, and a, like, tabletop room, because it was, like, in the farthest hotel. And a lot of the places were just filled, and it was sometimes hard to get around in narrow passages. So they had to move out. And, you know, it was getting harder to find somewhere that could fit a convention the size of Anime Next. And one of the places they settled on was Atlantic City. And it definitely holds the convention, but Atlantic City is what it is. But I feel like the first year was, like, fairly good. You saw the potential of the convention center, because it is a very nice convention center, though they have a lot of room to grow into. And the second year was actually a little weird, because I feel like for every step forward, they took a step back. There was a lot of communication problems. This year, I felt like a lot of that got cleared away. Like I said in the report, I don't have any communication errors to report, which is great because if you don't see them, you know, it's a clear sign that they've gone down. I'm sure in any convention with that many moving parts, there were some slight communication errors, but it wasn't constantly being broadcast to me as an attendee and as a press member and as a panelist that like, oh, people are not communicating and there are just clearly people who do not know what they're doing. Everything moved a lot cleaner this year. I assume that, you know, they had to take a step back and go like, what were we doing wrong this year? And I'm happy to say that they corrected it. But on the other hand, just from panel attendance, it felt a little sparser. As of now, they haven't posted attendance numbers. So I don't know if, you know, attendance went down, stayed the same, went up. I, being a misanthrope, kind of ignore other human beings when I'm just walking around. But I do notice panel attendance. So if there were more people, but they just weren't at the panels, that could be the case.
I was very curious if ACON being the same weekend had any influence. Now, the United States is very large. There's a convention every single weekend, multiple conventions, I should say, every single weekend across the country. So I'm not sure if it would have any serious impact, but it did make me kind of wonder.
No, somebody I was chatting with, I'm not like keeping their name out of the conversation. I just can't remember which of the people I chatted with over the weekend. I mentioned this, we talked about it. But somebody definitely mentioned ACON existing and them wondering the same thing. And I'm on the fence because I could see several factors of why the audiences would not cross over. I feel ACON feels very much PartyCon. I mean, I feel like it has a different reputation and feel, so I wonder how much...
I didn't know that. I didn't know that about ACON.
Yeah, no, it's kind of... It has a reputation for being a den of debauchery.
Good to know.
So I feel like people kind of go to ACON for very different reasons. A lot of times, the reason that someone like you and I might pick a con is not necessarily why the masses might, a fandom might pick a convention, which is sometimes easy for us to forget, or at least easy for me to forget. So I wonder how much that did play a factor, essentially. Like, I could go to Anime Next that has guests and panels and events, or I could go to Project ACON that has, you know, just, you know, raucous after parties and a reputation for scandalous behavior. And I think it's nearly been shut down several times.
What? This is all news to me. I guess it's because I don't go, so I never really, or never even consider going because it's too far. So I don't, doesn't really enter my mind to look into it.
I've never even, like, suffered the thought of going, but I just, like, random conversations have brought up ACON's rather sordid reputation. And the fact that it's, like, a real, like, one of the oldest still running cons.
So you're saying that nothing salacious happened at Anime Next?
It's a convention. Salacious stuff happened. Salacious stuff did not happen to one Alan Mendes. Nor was I...
If only you had gone to ACON.
Yeah, at ACON.
You'd come back with some very different stories.
And that's when I outran the police.
So you can't... So back to actuals. To actual Anime Next. So you didn't get a sense of whether or not attendance was lower. I mean, you said panel attendance was lower, but you couldn't tell walking around.
Walking around, things seemed fairly the same. When they had, like, an impromptu wrestling ring, where they had, like, some... Oh, so on the ground floor, they set up some amateur wrestling, and they had some amateur wrestlers come in.
It's finally happened! The crossover of wrestling fans and anime fans has come full circle.
So it was on the ground floor, and there's in the, like, the big lobby, and so they're like three floors, and you just saw people watching from all three floors above the main floor, just watching.
Oh, that's
this
cool.
I did not stick around, but I know, like, for the about 2 hours that that went on, if you ever went by there, there was just a sea of people in that area watching the amateur wrestling. I did, thanks to you guys, recognize when someone used Nakamura's theme.
So. You have some osmosis now, understanding.
But
were there lots of events, new events like that that you hadn't seen previously at all, or is that kind of like the only one that sort of stood out to you?
That was the one that stood out the most to me. But it was almost unavoidable, like, because it was right in the lobby, and, you know, it drew a huge crowd. And, you know, if there was like a cool thing in like a workshop room or something, it would be rather easy to miss. You know, it would be like, you know, if, like back in the day, like when they would have like in such a thing, like they would do cosplay chess, and there's still conventions that do that. I feel like it's that kind of draw. But if there were no other events that were such a on the nose draw as that one. But it definitely worked out for Anime Next, as I said. It was definitely a hub while it was on. But yeah, I got my press pass and my panelist passes super easily. So, and when my roommate went to registration, one of the other people in the room went with him. So I just chilled out and in the room because I had to wait for somebody else who was coming to the room anyhow. So I didn't get to see how many people were in registration, which is usually a good eyeball of how many people are there. I will say one thing that was nice was it was overcast, which you wouldn't think would be great, but it's usually so hot in Atlantic City that it makes travel time like so much more arduous. But the overcast weather definitely cooled things down, and it was actually nice to travel around. Also, I feel like everybody kind of got places quicker because it wasn't, you know, you weren't just this death trudge everywhere. And we were at the Sheraton this time, so I didn't have to like make a long hike from one of the hotel casinos to the convention center. I just basically walked out of the Sheraton and went into the convention center. I never took it, but you could just cross a sky bridge and you wouldn't even have to leave the hotel.
It's my new favorite thing now.
So I also didn't do as much traveling around. So I'm a little... I basically, the only reason I traveled around was to get food or supplies or something. So it was a little harder to tell also how many people were around.
So what were the big events this year?
So the big band was All Out, which I didn't see, but they seemed pretty popular. There was another musical guest, but they had to drop out at the last minute. And there was a voice actress who did like a Sunday concert. There were a bunch of American guests who I was... the big Japanese guests were Kenji Kamiyama and Shinji Aramaki. And they were basically there to promote a new CG animated Ultraman series they're working on. It's based on that Ultraman comic that's recently been coming out from Viz, if you've seen that. It's a sequel to the original, the very original Tokusatsu Ultraman TV show. And I've read a little bit. It's like kind of has a lot of like gritty conspiracy theory. That's what they were there for. They are both also working on a new Ghost in the Shell TV series, but that's just in pre-production. And apparently they basically told me that they're not really like super devoted to working on that until this is over. So once this, I mean, this is coming out, but, they kind of were, you know, I think they've only just started working on that. So they weren't really super ready to answer a lot of questions about that. They seem to just be getting their minds out of the Ultraman movie. So that's why you didn't see it on any of the, like, I mean, they mentioned it briefly in the thing, but it wasn't like a title for any of the panels or, you know, something that they brought up, even though I feel like, you know, if they had more work on it, it definitely is a name they would have dropped. They did mention that the Ultraman stuff was... What was interesting about that is they're both co-directors on that, and they seem to be about equal importance. Not like, you know, Kenji Kamiyama is like the main director and Shinji Aramaki is like the like CG director or something like that, or vice versa, you know. And they kind of brought that up once or twice, that that's not super usual. There's usually, they're like, you see that with like American movies, and they brought up like the Coen brothers and the Wachowskis and stuff, that very much two directors of generally equal standing working on a project. So like that doesn't happen that much in anime production. So it's a bit of a different case, which I thought was interesting.
How much did they bring to show?
So they basically had like a clip of a fight scene and some other additional like little material, but not too much more than that. The thing that they really kind of wanted to show off about it was the fact that they used a lot of motion capture. So they kind of almost had like guys in tokusatsu suits do the fight scenes, and then they animated off of that for the CG. And they were hoping that it would give it a little more feeling of the original TV show that way. The other problem is I didn't actually see that video, because the time that they played it was just... I had a panel after it, and so they played it at the very end of the panel, and I left so I could prepare for my panel. So I only got like a brief like description of the panel from some people who stayed for the whole thing. So if it was great or terrible, I can't really tell you. Most people were like, not like horribly disgusted, but definitely not like, it blew my mind. It was like Land of the Lustrous plus Pixar. A lot like Aramaki's kind of, Aramaki's other CG work, which is like the Harlock movies and Appleseed movies, which is better than a lot of Japanese CG, but definitely, I think, still a little in the Japanese CG zone. Hopefully better than that horrible Re-Cyborg 009 movie that Kamiyama did, which is ugh. Part of me wonders if like part of this collaboration is for Kenji Kamiyama to like learn from Aramaki how to like up his CG game, because I mean he's great with 2D animation, but that Cyborg 00 movie was not that, it was not good. Now I'm not even gonna like give it not that good, it was not good. And did you see Napping Princess?
No.
Oh. Like, once again, I felt like the 2D scenes in that movie are great. And the two CG scenes, not very good. That time was not very good. But, so I'm wondering if that's part of the... You can't really ask that, but that would be my speculation, that they basically want him to study under Aramaki, who's at least got a better grasp of how to do that. We'll see how that all plays out with the... Ultraman movie when that comes out. Hopefully that'll help also the new Ghost in the Shell series, because I think everybody wants that one to be, you know, good, be the next standalone complex.
We cannot set our sights that high.
Yeah, no, the next Arise.
Fine. So what do you feel the industry presence was at the convention? Because since I haven't been since they moved, do you feel like it's grown? Or do you feel like, no, there's still not really a lot of companies coming directly?
Well, I mean, the badges were directly, had High Dive all over them.
Ah,
which
okay.
A lot of people were like, man, I didn't realize High Dive was enough of a thing that it can, like, sponsor a convention. Like, when Crunchyroll does it, I don't think anybody was super surprised. They just seem such a presence in the industry. And same thing with Funimation, but I guess now that you think about it, when you realize High Dive and Sentai is really just ADV, ADV always had a habit of doing stuff, whether it was good for them or not. So I don't feel like Sentai is that much different. I mean, sometimes their things work out, and other times, like, what are you doing there? But, so I guess them getting back into the sponsoring convention game is kind of their MO. I didn't actually step into the dealer's room. I think I've just gotten so used to just shopping for everything online and generally saving my money that I didn't even step into the dealer's room. I usually at least take a trip or two around, but nobody I was with was like, oh man, I'm gonna check out the dealer's room, and I'm like, I'll go with you. Like, I can't tell you how much of a presence there were. And at this point, I almost only go to industry panels as a matter of last resort.
Like, oh, there's nothing else going on right yeah. now, so I guess I'll go.
Like, I know there was a Funimation panel and the such, but I'm like, yeah, if anything interesting is announced, I'm sure I'll be on Crunchyroll and A&N.
Someone will tweet about it instantly, so...
Even if nothing else, the person running the panel will tweet about it. And, like, once again, I feel like the thing that made me realize the panel attendance was really down was when AWO and Charles Dunbar panels didn't fill up all the way. And I was like, oh, man. One, it doesn't make me feel as bad that new anime for older fans was just like 75% filled. Because I'm like, hey, if AWO and Charles Dunbar don't have to turn people away, there's no shame in me not having to turn people away. But I feel like the panel game was pretty good. So I don't feel like I'm just like, oh man, the panels were just all stinkers this year.
I think Anime Next is long past that happening. They have really dedicated themselves to their panel content. So I feel like you can have faith that they're going to have good panels. But I do feel as though, and I don't know what it is, but I have always felt that panel attendance at Anime Next is wildly variable. Even no matter what, if it's a good panel or not. And obviously, when it was at a smaller con, things would fill up because some of the rooms were so tiny. But I also just seemed like whatever way the wind blew, that's where the
people went.
Yeah, obviously I haven't been since they moved, so I don't know if that, something about people who attend Anime Next, it's like they have these whims or something.
I did notice there weren't as many like super obvious clickbaity titles, as I said. Last year, there wasn't any like, the worst anime of all time that will blow your mind. The worst was like the good, the bad, and the ugly of anime. And it was some guy that basically watched a bunch of shows and then basically picked a bunch of like good shows, bad shows, and ugly shows, you know. But no handshakers.
He just didn't watch that one, Al.
I see.
You have to do your own panel if you want to show handshakers to everyone.
I see. Fine enough. So, friend of the blog, Zan, did a bunch of panels. He did, I think, one day six panels.
Oh my god, no, Zan! Don't do that!
And, like, two of them were game showy ones, so they were longer than... They're like, he has a fiancé who's been helping him out with the panels, and he usually has a third co-host on all of them, but, like, his fiance definitely helps him out, but the third person is usually only a variable help. Like, his, like, cooking manga one and, like, his manga recommendation ones, he did, like, most of the talking on those. And, like, the third person, like, at most chimed in, so it wasn't even like, you know, he could, like, rest.
I don't know how anybody does that, because if I have to do one panel a day, I'm like, that was so exhausting.
Like, two is like a biathlon.
Yeah, it's two, which I've frequently done, is like, wow, I can't believe I've done so much work today.
Six, you would just be a pool of goo on the floor.
I just can't even. How did your panel go, Al?
I think it went well. So this year, since Kate wasn't doing panels this year, I decided to play with the format of new anime for older fans a little bit. So I only picked shows that I had watched, and I tried putting the openings before introducing the show, and then cutting the clips a little bit. I'm not 100% sure how much that hurt or helped, but it was definitely interesting. So I did get one piece of feedback from Evan, which was that a lot of people were both interested in Kaido, the right answer, but also like, I'm not sure I'd ever watch that show because it seems like a lot of talking. But like, I was kind of, that was like one of the shows I was on the fence about and almost cut, because just between you and me speakers, the ending to that show was kind of controversial. And Like those people and Evan mentioned, it is a heavy talky show, but I do feel like a lot of that talky this is discussing social issues and issues of technology and man, which I feel like makes it a good show to have on the new anime for older list. And it's not like all the shows I picked were like that. I mean, I had comedies, I had action shows. So it wasn't like it was all, you know, Philosophy 301.
You know what other series that has a lot of talking in it? Ghost in the Shell has a lot of fucking talking in it. So,
but at least I feel like every, like, three or four episodes, they have a big action sequence. Whereas, like, there are, like, two action sequences.
Oh, it's Idaho. You can't even be like, look, look, look. Interspersed.
Yeah.
Is coolness.
So, yeah, it's a little, but I feel like if I couch it with enough other shows that have enough other things, it was worth putting on.
And you're going to be running a similar panel at Otakon, right?
Yeah, yeah. My one of my little things is I think I'm going to put...
Oh, don't tell. Don't tell anyone. I think I'm going to switch some things out, is what you're saying.
I think I'm going to change the format a little bit. I think the shows are good. Plus, I don't want to put on too many shows, because a lot of the shows I'd put on, I think, are shows that we're probably going to use, like, next year. Just as a spoiler, like, Megalobox, I wouldn't want to put on that one, because that one, I mean, unless it utterly just blows up at the end, and it's like, what, it was all a dream, an incest dream?
Oh, my God! Stop! Stop!
How could you?
We're gonna find out that Joe actually got pregnant from his surrogate father coach. That's what you're gonna say? Yeah.
It's all an impreg. It's such a dream. No. How could you ruin the ending so poorly, Megalobox? But yeah, once again, probably gonna be. So
that show should get on Cartoon Network.
No, definitely. And then the one or two other shows. I guess the only one I could throw in...
Don't say!
They're like one, but I think I'm just... Once again, I feel like any shows I'm going
to
say...
You have to entice the audience, Al! Build suspense!
So yeah, I am going to change the format a little bit.
Okay.
See if how it affects the flow.
From all the names you've been mentioning, sounds like there was like... high-level panelists, I mean, all over the convention.
They've been doing the featured panelists where they bring in some celebrity name, you know, minor celebrity names to do panels. And,
how do they deal with all the paparazzi, then?
They just have bouncers beat them up.
Oh, all right.
You know, Gerald just flocked with fangirls and, you know, people tried to catch him in, you know, drug and hookers filled scandals. You know, the standard Gerald Rathgold shenanigans.
I've heard tell. I mean, knowing him is like having your own personal Akon, right?
And you know, Daryl always, you know, pulling death-defying stunts. You know, having international incidents, you know, standard.
Well, I'm glad that they could bring all that excitement to Anime Next. Now, of course, you also know or are acquaintances with a lot of people who staff Anime Next. Did you, you know, get a sense from them how they felt about the year?
So the problem is I only saw Vince the first day, and then I got the pin off him. And I never actually ran into him for the rest of the con. And Vinny, who was staff this year, one, he wasn't as involved because he moved for grad school. And apparently he talked his significant other into coming to the con with him. So for some reason, he wanted to spend more time with his SO than us. I ran into the both of them at the second Japanese guest panel, but we talked a little bit, but it was mostly, we didn't talk about the con. I didn't get a good sense of what he thought of the con. So they're usually my best two kind of barometers, but they were both indisposed. So I'm going to try to get an interview with Vince this year. If anybody is really interested, maybe they can, if they you know, if this goes out before the interview, maybe they can get in some questions. I'm going to try to get some idea about the convention from that.
So in your con report, you described the convention often and well in a lot of ways as being very mild.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I also interpreted it as like it was fine. It was a fine year, a fine vintage, but it wasn't an extremely memorable year.
I mean, once again, the guests were fine, but they were old man guests. I mean, like I said, Kenji Kamiyama is a little more connected to shows that the kids like, but, you know, he isn't. I mean, the last thing he did was Napping Princess, which is definitely a family film. I'm sure there are some tokusatsu kids out there who really like Ultraman, but if they were, like, some Kamen Rider dudes. Yeah, if it was Kamen Rider or Garo, we might have got a little more of the modern American tokusatsu fandom. But I feel like Ultraman is pretty the old man tokusatsu series. And like I said, if they had Ghost in the Shell, I think it would have been a little different. But, because that's still a...
That's like evergreen, right?
Mm-mm. But since they're only just starting to think about that one, that's probably not going to be a title that really draws in crowds for about 2 years. And then we didn't have any like super premieres that I could think of that would generate a lot of buzz. And like I said, panel attendance seemed down.
But the panels were good.
Yeah, they were good.
But the content was good.
Yeah, but I feel like you didn't see as much. You know, there wasn't any like, oh my god, everybody's rushing to see these five panels. So,
I mean, it just sounds like there weren't like high highs and low lows. It was just, you know, it was very steady.
Yeah.
Like, almost, you know, and that's, like you said, that's not bad.
And like, once again, my example is the video game room had some new stuff as well as staples. But there wasn't anything that like blew your mind. And those Gundam pods are cool, but they've been there for 2 years now, so they still draw a crowd, but they're not like, whoa, what are these? Like I said, if they had something like Magician's Dead, which is weird because it didn't do well in Japan, but it has a cool gimmick where you play all with like motion controls and like a Wii nunchuck. I think that might have been like, oh wow, you got this. Or they didn't have like a Grand Order cabinet that just came out, that just started coming out in Japan or something.
I mean, who would have been interested in that?
I don't know, losers. But I mean, obviously I picked Grand Order because that's the one new arcade cabinet that I know about. But, and those are hard to get out of Japan when they're new. So I understand why they wouldn't have them there. But I feel like there was nothing that was like, wow. And that's what it was. I felt like it had a lot of staples and they did them well, but nothing that was shocking and crazy. And, you know, I had a good time and I enjoyed myself. And I'm just glad to see that they, you know, really improved after last year. But
it's like they improved on like the core things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not the most exciting thing to talk about, but very important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like they prevented a degrade in the convention's quality. So they have, in my opinion, a lot of potential to make next year really exciting, especially if they can land a really cool guest or get some awesome premieres or get some interesting content. Because, you know, if they get it, if they have this year's competency, they'll be able to pull it off and be like, oh man, you had Gakuto, but you totally... Look,
no, I don't say those things!
You had the guys from Type Moon. There's something you don't give one fuck about. There you go. You have the guys from Type Moon, but you didn't blow it and, like, just make them miserable and, like, we're never going to be at an American con again because we had such a miserable experience this time. Which, you know, I feel like cons have done in the past. Like, they've burnt a guest so much that they either don't want to come back or, you know, they take a hiatus from coming to American cons for a while. I don't feel like any of that's going to happen. And I feel like they're primed to make, you know, next year really awesome. But we'll have to see what they have next year. I think they can capitalize on it. This episode's food for thought.
This time's food for thought is, what are you most looking forward to in the summer anime season? Like we mentioned before, we're about to start our SWAT review, so it's perfect time to talk about it.
Listen to our song! To the food for thought.
All right, our food for thought was, what show are you most looking forward to in the upcoming anime season? I think my answer is predictable, so that's why I want to go first.
Overlord 3.
I was like, you knew it, Al. You knew.
Too easy.
It feels though I definitely know what my answer is going to be, but I have no idea what yours is going to be. So For me, I'm really excited about the third season of Free. I talked about the movie, the most recent movie on here, as it being sort of an introduction to this season, and the characters will be in college, so I'm really, or at least a good portion of the characters will be, so I'm really looking forward to seeing where their stories go next.
My answer is Banana Fish. If people remember, I did that as I wrote that up for the blog a while back.
Oh my god, no one remembers that. That was like, how many years ago? We should repost it, maybe. I'll put a link in the show notes.
That original manga was started in the 80s and ran till the 90s and has a very distinctly 80s feel. And MAPPA is doing the remake, and I know they're going to...
Well, the adaptation. It hasn't been animated before, right? I don't think so.
Me and Carol were having a discussion. I think it might have had most of the little OEV or something like that. But this is basically the first full production, if it ever got any minor amount of adaptation. But from what I remember hearing, they're going to update the setting a bit because... like, a lot has changed. It starts in, like, Vietnam, and then it jumps ahead to, like, mid-80s, and it has a very mid-80s Japan interpretation of New York, which is, like, half well-researched, half...
Mad Bull.
Yeah, Mad Bull and Streets of Fire, which is, and so, obviously, I think Japan's knowledge... or just baseline knowledge of what America is like has changed a lot. And, you know, it deals a lot with homosexuality and that in the original time when it was a lot more... It had, once again, it's very much tied to that idea in the 80s, so I feel like MAPPA is probably going to play around a little with that.
Oh, so you don't think it's going to be set in the 80s?
I'm not sure, but I think they... I know they're tweaking a little bit. I don't know exactly how. I wonder if they're going to, like, you know, instead of... You know, kind of how, like, they've done with Iron Man... You know, maybe tweak it from Vietnam to, like, the Gulf War or something like that. And I'm curious to see how much of the original story they tweak.
Wow, that's very interesting. I'm not sure we've seen that a lot because... I haven't really read Banana Fish. I sort of just know about it. And, of course, it was one of those very early series that did get translated into English. The manga did. But I think... You know, part of the story is that it's set at a certain time. I think that that's relevant to the story. So I think that's very interesting if they're going to change that.
Once again, I felt like if it was some other studio, I'd be a lot more worried. But I feel, from what we've seen and just knowing Maruyama, I feel like if anybody could pull off an interesting reinterpretation, take, like, the general good ideas and themes and kind of push them forward, I think MAPPA would be the studio that I trust. Is one of the studios I would trust to do that well. The most fascinating news and conversations from this month. Kate, a few years back, went to Japan. It was her first trip to Japan. And just this summer, she has re-gone to Japan. So this is kind of Kate round two. She is not a veteran. She's not one of those people who goes like twice a year for 10 years. But I do feel that, you know, now that you have at least one major trip, that was a pretty long trip under your belt, I feel like you could retackle your trip to Japan with a little bit of experience. It's like, it's your sophomore effort. It's definitely, you are not a veteran, but you are definitely not a wide-eyed freshman.
And I think a big difference with this trip as opposed to my first trip was that it was, of course, a shorter period of time. I couldn't go for an insane amount of time, but I spent all of that time in Tokyo. I didn't go traveling so that I sort of got a real feel for the city. I mean, I think I did that last time, and that made this trip more comfortable and sort of more familiar.
So I have a quick question before we get into anything else. As someone who has not gone, having experienced a I spent some time in Tokyo, some time in the rest of Japan, or and now an all Tokyo trip. For someone's first trip, which one do you think is a better option?
Feel as though I'd have a couple of questions, because one I think would be, how long can you go? Because I think it's easy, and something that I certainly sort of misinterpreted, especially as someone who comes from the United States, was that Japan is big. It's not, it seems really small because the United States is so ridiculously huge. So it seems like, sure, we can see all of it, right? In some amount of time. And you can definitely go a lot of places, but it's not a tiny place. So it does take time to get across the country to, you know, really see things. So I think if you're only going for like a week, you know, maybe that's all you have, I think Tokyo, stay in Tokyo and do a day trip, because there's a lot of places that you can get to just from that hub for the day, but then you can like come back, as opposed to trying to say travel everywhere. If you have 2 weeks, I'd say grab the rail pass and spend like one of those weeks traveling and seeing different cities, and then maybe 1 week in Tokyo. Because the other thing about Tokyo, which somehow I went here, like I stayed in Tokyo last time for 10 days and I was there about 10, 11 days this time. And somehow I didn't remember that Tokyo is huge. It's a massive, massive city. And I was totally exhausted every day from trying to see so much. So there's certainly enough to see in Tokyo to just be there. And there's just like a ton. It's a giant, giant city. It's not as if, oh, well, now I'm bored. But some people feel like, you know, I think it depends on how you feel about cities too. I love New York City. I'm never trying to escape New York City, as opposed to like some people who live here and don't love it, I guess. But so Tokyo is a lot like New York City, which makes me very comfortable. And I like cities for many different reasons. So I find it very easy to be in Tokyo, because it's like, oh, well, like I get it. I can sort of understand how the vibe of this works. But if you are like, you know, I live in an urban environment or I don't love urban, then I would say, again, maybe stay there for a week, but do a week of seeing other things, because it's a super urban place. But again, you can do little day trips outside of it. You can go see Mount Fuji. You can go to Nikko. There's a lot of areas that you can go to see nature too. So, but yes, so this trip, all Tokyo. I did go to Yokohama one day, which is a great little day trip thing to do. But yeah, it was mostly kind of a relaxing trip of like being a nerd and doing nerd stuff and trying to like grasp all that otakudom that exists there in Tokyo. I went to 3 doujin events. And I spent, yeah, a lot. I feel like I spent a lot more time in Akihabara, in this, you know, shops, and like getting to spend like just a little bit more of my time doing mostly only nerd things, as opposed to last time I really tried to kind of balance the cultural with the nerd stuff. And I did still do some cultural stuff, but felt like I also wanted to just like be able to just be an otaku the whole time and feel really good about it. Oh, so in addition to going to some doujin events, I also went to 2 movies. So, like, writing down how much it cost me to go to the movies was, like, the most horrifying part of my expense report. But other than that, I'm, like, really glad that I, you know, I did those things. And there still was, like, a million otaku things that I didn't get to do. So don't worry, you'll always have something to do, and you'll never have seen it all. Whether you're there just doing otaku stuff, you still won't see everything. It won't happen. And I feel like that's something that I really could not accept. I still don't accept it. I didn't see everything, and I think that's bullshit, because I spent so much time there that it's ridiculous. Like, surely I could have seen everything, but I couldn't.
So I know you went to the Conan movie. What was the other movie you went to?
I also went to see The Last Gundam, The Origin movie. It was nice because it was like the last one, so it seemed some sort of special. gets to see Char being evil, you know. And, yeah, and I also saw the 22nd Conan movie.
Which is the one that's, like, breaking all kinds of records and... I know, like, every week I'll see, like, Detective Conan movie stays in top 10 and, you know, breaks further, you know, Japanese movie record.
Yeah, I think now, you know, it's finally been, like, 2 months since it came out, so now it's, like, dropped down and still making money, I think. But, yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, the Conan presence when I went was so much fun because, obviously... Anybody listening to this podcast knows that I love Conan. And actually, you know, the last time I went, I also saw a Conan movie. I saw the 20th anniversary movie, which I was so excited to be able to be there at that time for its, you know, this milestone. But this time, it's almost perfect that I went at almost at the same time and also saw a Conan movie because I can directly speak to what my sort of view of how it has changed a little bit. Conan is big. It has 22 movies. I don't need to tell anybody. It's big. It's popular. It's been running for, you know, decades. It's enjoys a very special place in people's hearts and is sort of this family, kid and adult, enjoy it sort of anime. And so you see it a little bit everywhere. It's one of those ones sort of like a One Piece where it's like, oh, you see it everywhere, but it doesn't always feel like those shows then are super popular with otaku, right? Like you don't always see those shows represent, they might be represented in a small way, but it's not like those are the big otaku shows. And so this time, Conan was in every anime, it was in every nerd store and not nerd store, it was in every doujin store, like, hugely represented, it felt very different. It somehow, after over 20 years, Conan has, like, somehow it has moved into a different state of its fandom, I think. And so... just seeing how many people were this excited about Conan was... I was, like, not expecting it. So I thought that was really cool. You know, most of that is attributed to Amaro, the character who the 22nd movie heavily focuses on. He's been in the series for a while, but, you know, he's gaining kind of momentum. And in fact, when I saw the 20th movie, I was sort of surprised that I wasn't seeing him more around. And maybe I was just, like, right before everyone realized everything that they had. I was like, why isn't there more Akai Amaro, like, fandom? Like, this seems exactly, Akai, you know, is this mysterious sniper character who was a part of the Black Organization. There's a rivalry between him and Amaro. Like, there's some misinterpretation about, you know, the past between them. And, like, they're just, like, why is there not stuff about these characters?
So it's like you were just about to get on the plane and you were like, man, it's so odd there isn't more Amaro Akai.
throughout Japan.
And then, like, all the Conan fans, especially the Fujiyoshi, were like, I hear a call to action.
Yeah, that's kind of how it felt when I walked into Toru no Anna and there was just an entire corner section dedicated to the two of them, essentially. So I was like, okay, this is... Yeah, apparently there's, like, they needed time. They needed some time to rectify this. And they have. So I also learned from some people that we met up with there that the car that Amaro drives in the series is selling really well now in Japan because of this character. Like, that's the level of fandom that it's right now it's enjoying.
Isn't there also the story about the family stamps?
Oh, yeah. There's a similar thing is that, like, apparently, according to the person telling me this story, fangirls like to buy the you know, in Japan you have a stamp, a seal that has sort of like your family seal, and you use it to sign things or mark things. And the Amaro's name I guess his full, I'm just like blanking on his full name, but like, is like a fairly common name, but all of a sudden there was like a flood of people like ordering his name, and the Stand Mayor was like, okay. And it was like, oh, it's because these girls like to stamp his name in their like schedule books and stuff to be like, he approved my whatever. I don't know. This was like a third hand story that I heard. So I'm probably getting some of the details wrong. But yeah, it's just, it's, I feel like it's just not really enjoyed that this amount of interest, that it's different from when I went before. Not that it's never had this amount of interest. I'm sure that it has. I mean, it's been going on a long time. Maybe there's just sort of these waves of it. That meant that I got a lot of Conan stuff while I was there, that there was a lot of Conan stuff to buy, and I actually had to stop myself from buying Conan stuff. Like, oh, there's too much Conan stuff. I actually want to buy things from other series because I could have just spent all of my money on Conan stuff. That's how much stuff there was. And I still came back with plenty of Conan stuff. So I thought that was very interesting. And the movie is also really cool and really good. I look forward to watching it translated because there is a lot of complex relationships, because there's a lot of different police departments in it, and so there's sort of like this relation between all of them that is a little more complex, so I didn't get, you know, I really didn't get all of that, but it was still a very enjoyable experience. So I know that, you know, I'm not going to talk about my whole trip. I'm just trying to hit some of the stuff that I think everybody listening would be interested in. So the doujin scene, obviously, always a big interest just because that tells you what's popular right now. And the differences from last time, again, were very interesting. So Osamatsu is still big, but not, it has definitely come down to be alongside other things and not the only thing that you will ever find. Idol everything for guy idols, like Idolish, Seven, and other idol series, those are still really
the love
really
live the
no for of guys. Oh, whoa, whoa, of guys. Whoa, whoa. Oh, I'll get to the sorry, of guys, not for guys.
Yes, thank
sorry.
You.
Yeah. So, but still, like, I would say, I mean, I can say that too. Idols on both sides, still very popular, duh. Yuri on Ice was really big, huge sections of it. The thing that I thought was most of interest about that is that 90% of the Yuri on Ice sections, which are big sections, are just Yuri Victor. So, canon, the canon couple is the, that's what people want. And so that's, I thought that was so interesting, and I think it probably, to me, it said a lot about what kind of stories people are looking for, that, you know, I think there's a lot of, like, of course, we joke about Fujoshi, we make fun of fangirls, I'm a fangirl, so, you know, I think, and a lot of people poke fun at them, us, whatever you want to say, but it's not just about, oh, I just want these characters to be together, you know, in a series, because, like, that's just, like, what I'm into or whatever it is, that if you really write a story about a gay couple and you put all of your effort into it and you put all of the character and all of that, in, like, just massive amounts of story and thought into it, people will come to it and people will embrace that. They're not just pairing people up because
aesthetics or,
like, obviously that still happens. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that doesn't ever happen, but that people embrace that story. If you're going to actually tell that story, people are going to be there for that story. And it's not just, that's too easy, or, like, we've seen that, or whatever. It's about the story. And so, and, you know, in a lot of cases, it is, like, trying to figure out that dynamic between the characters, and that's what draws people to that pairing. And if you think it all the way through and create a good couple, people will be there for it. So I thought that was, like, very interesting, and I really liked that. Just this little discovery on my part of the sports boys. I'd say Haikyuu is still, like, is the top tier, and then everything else is, like, moved on a little bit. I mean, it's still there, but it's not huge. I wonder if Free coming back will, like, you know, reinvigorate that a little bit for Free. And I also think it's very interesting that Haikyuu So not only was Haikyuu big at the doujin places, but it was still really big at, like, animate and where you're getting, you know, the newest goods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the newest, coolest, whatever. It was still really big there, even though it hasn't had an anime in a while. So I was like, wow, like, this is kind of impressive. That made me hope that we will get some more anime sometime soon for Haikyuu, because it was so popular, and it seems to have stayed really popular. I think in the guys, for girls, also Token Rambu, Sword Boys, probably maybe the biggest thing. It was huge.
Those Sword Boys have not gotten nowhere.
Yeah, and it depended on the store. Like, I felt like in Akihabara, it felt like more. Everybody almost had their own, like a normal section. Like, nothing was, like, crazy insanely big or had a huge section that was super noticeable, except Conan was, like, weirdly large. But then when I was in, like, Ikebukuro, Sword Boys was, like, half the floor. I guess also different areas have different things.
It was pretty much like, what do you call it? If you're not looking for Sword Boys, ask a sales clerk and we'll go into the back and look for you.
Yeah, it was a lot. But then again, you know, Ikebukuro is, I think, considered more of a girls' area. I mean, that's where Otome Road was. I wasn't on Otome Road when I, like, the store I'm talking, like, Torono Ana is not on that road, but I think the area is considered, I guess, more for girls. That's where a lot of meeting and stuff happens, so maybe that's why it was also slightly different. For guys, I feel like there wasn't as much variety. I didn't spend a ton of time. I sent others to report back to me. But, you know, like I said, so Idol Anything was very big. Kantai Collection was, like, I would just stand around going, I have no idea what any of this is, and it would be, like, all Kantai Collection. And then Fate mm-hmm. stuff was, like, the big, like, front-facing sort of, like, mm-hmm. here's what we're, like, trying to get you to come over here and look at sort of thing. So, what's the other? I'm trying to think. There's, like, Kantai. Oh, and then what's the other? There's another game that, Toho. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't seem to be the juggernaut that it once was.
Yeah, no. I find it interesting that, like, Toho is now just this, like, staple. But, like, it's, like, yeah, everyone was like, is Toho going to take over forever? And it's like, no.
They'll always be moving on. And then, I did want to get back to Animate for a minute. It's something I thought was interesting. So I mentioned the Haikyuu thing of seeing it a lot there. But I felt that, I don't know if it's just when I went or if it's a new trend or I'm not sure. Especially because I'm not there enough to really speak to, like, what's the trend? But I felt as though last time I visited, it felt like Animate was a place where you really just found, here's what's on TV right now, and that's what you're gonna find. And then maybe some, like, leftovers from, like, the previous season. And this is, like, what we're pushing that's new and shiny, and here it is. And then this time, you still found whatever was new, but I felt like there was a lot more nostalgia stuff. So I don't know if there's, like, a round of nostalgia going on right now that people are really into, because I just saw, like, lots of series that were popular in the past and just had stuff, new merch of everything.
I just imagined a sign that was like, only 90s otaku will understand these figures.
Yeah, but it was just... So, I mean, there was still all the new stuff. My Hero Academia, by far, you know, like, kind of the big gun in there. But there was just so much. There was Sailor Moon and Rose of Versailles and Full Metal Alchemist. I found Full Metal Alchemist stuff everywhere. It's like, what? I mean, thank you. I will buy some of this. But, you know, like, what's this doing here? And just a lot of, like a lot of stuff from the past that was, you know, once enjoyed a big fandom. I saw Rumiko Takahashi just, like, not a ton. I saw her.
Yeah,
she was there.
Just, she was just hanging out.
In Animate. Just standing around.
Okay, Rumiko. How you doing? Yeah, you know.
But yeah, so I don't know if maybe, I wish, if somebody knows or has any, you know, thoughts on this, I'd love to hear it. I just felt like I was seeing older stuff. And I just wasn't expecting
and
it.
And not in, like, used stores, like in the Gamers or something.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to...
Yeah. Like, this is, like, all new merch, you know, and it was just, like, a bunch of stuff, you know. So I thought that was very interesting. Also, one series that, you know, is not as old, but obviously we have some new stuff coming up. Although I almost feel like they keep saying that it's coming, and I'm like, is it? Are we still doing this? So Code Geass, you know, like, they're like, there's gonna be new Code Geass! And you're like, wasn't that, like, 15 years ago that you said that? When? What is this happening? But there was a bunch of Code Geass stuff, so they're ramping up to make us care again about Code Geass. I have my doubts if they can make me care after that horrific OVA, but, you know, power to them to try, I guess. As far as manga stuff, I felt like... Oh, did you have something? Oh.
Yeah.
I think there... Like, I was trying to pick out, like, whenever we went to manga stores, there was usually, like, either front-facing stuff or... At the used stores, it'd be like, these are the popular series. So just seeing if there was, like, anything that was interesting there. Ancient Magus Bride was in that section. Golden Kamuy. So that's, you know, it makes it... I saw a lot of gold, you know, we saw, like, ads and stuff for Golden Kamuy on the street. So it's clearly, like, popular right now. Beastars, man. Beastars was everywhere. If that doesn't get an anime in the next year, I would be surprised.
Because I know... Whenever I randomly stop into Kino, when I go to the main library in Manhattan just to look for Persona stuff for my roommate, I'd say, like, 2 out of 3 times, they'll have, like, a little, like, hey, Beastars, am I right? Display? So that, like, that makes a lot more sense, if nothing else. And they're obviously, like, the Japanese branch is like, Beastars is popular there, so you should put Beastars out in your American branch.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it a lot, so I'm it's making me more and more curious. So somebody do something with it so we can find out more.
I did mention that I've seen covers that there's more than just, like, wolf and dog people. There's other kinds of animal people in that series.
Yeah, I have no idea what it's going to be, but it's just like, I mean, I have no idea what it's about beyond the covers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all kind of getting curious at this point. Yeah, I feel like there wasn't a lot that I was super surprised by manga-wise, except that, you know, obviously the standards are still there. A lot of the sports series are still there. I also saw One Piece a little bit more, mm-hmm. and I feel like it doesn't normally register that much in the otaku. Kind of like with Conan, like, it doesn't necessarily register in the otaku areas as much as, like, One Piece is, like, this mainstream thing that's just, like, everywhere and whatever. But that's something that I was, like, seeing a little bit more of, like, oh, it's actually here in these otaku shops, and, like, people are, you know, like, making doujin and, like, doing more with it than I feel like I noticed from the last time I was there. So... Yeah, you know, I spent a lot of time in used bookstores. Of course, I forgot to mention, obviously, Pop Team Epic, still popular. Apparently, I missed when it was on TV, it was so popular that it was in every store for everything. And not just, like, otaku stores, but apparently it infiltrated just general subculture. So it was just, like... on magazines and, like, in stores of clothing store or whatever. It was just everywhere.
So you're saying that Pop Team Epic became for subculture bitches?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. That was a prophetic statement. And I'm really interested to see what's going to happen when it hits Cartoon Network here in the U.S. because... It feels right for that. So I hope that it reaches some level of weird subculture status here too.
People will be mentioning being arrested for YouTube crimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, and we went to the Cospa store and there was about 16 different shirts of Pop Team Epic. Whereas most things have like 2 or 3. It was like, no, we have an entire wall. It's just like Pop Team Epic shirts. So, yeah, of course, that one was big. And I did come home with a bag to prove it.
But it wasn't one of those Those, like, clear pin bags?
No. Mm-hmm. I'll be showing it off at the cons, don't worry. As for the doujin events I went to, so I did go to a Pop Team Epic doujin event. It was tiny! It was like the littlest baby doujin event ever! I think there was like 10 people, or 10 booths, rather. It was... You know, once we got there, it was... So, first they made us pay, like, a very ridiculous price to get the booklet for the event. We had to pay 333 yen. But you had to pay exactly 333. Like, you couldn't get change. So, we had to, like, run to a coffee shop and, like, be like, can we get change for this so that we can, like, get 333 yen to get that? Of course, you didn't have to buy that, but... I mean, that's the fun part of going to these, I think, is getting the, like, little program guide. And then, you know, just, like, some people drawing, obviously, 18-plus doujin. Some people just riffing on the actual manga. Like, what we picked up was one that had, like, taken, the actual comic and then, like, sort of reinterpreted panels using different anime characters, so sort of like changed the context a little bit into like something that would happen in that anime. So there was like Precure and Votoms and like Cardcaptor Sakura and stuff like that, like within the pages of it. But it was the tiniest. It was free. You didn't have to pay to get into it. So
did it share? I know sometimes those little events, they'll be like, it's Pop Team Epic and Haikyuu and I don't know, Idolmaster, or was it like, did it share the space with like other, or was it just this like little micro Pop Team event?
So it shared the building. So this particular building has a bunch of floors and a bunch of different spaces. So it was in like a little tiny space on the second floor, and then on the first floor was another event we went to. So it wasn't directly sharing its space, but it was in the same building as another event, which was Splat Cat. So that was a Splatoon doujin event, which was a lot bigger than the Pop Team Epic one. And a lot of...
You're not squidding me about that?
I am not. I would never. And that was like a really fun little event because people were selling, you know, like some of the stuff I picked up was like a fashion magazine, but you know, of course in Splatoon, like fashion is big. So like a lot of like, or like a listing of all the weapons and stuff like that. I picked up sort of stuff like that, but there was also, you know, full on comics and 18 plus stuff and a lot of merch at the Splatoon event, which I don't see as much when I go to the few doujin events that I've gone to. You know, usually it's more like actual comics, but the Splatoon one had a lot more merchandise, and I wonder if, I don't know if that's just because it's Splatoon, or if they're, you know, that's something that I think we see a lot at American cons, so I don't know if that's something that sort of has like filtered over or not. I'd be interested in anybody's information or interpretation if you feel like, if you go to doujin events in Japan, if there's like an upping in the merch category instead of just comics. So,
or if that's, or if there's an upping but only in like certain, like is it just video games or is it just like the mainstream of mainstream? But yeah, I think that would be interesting.
And I went to an event called Game Legend, which was all about retro gaming. And there, too, a lot of merch, a lot of music, and then, like, some comics. And also, like, little tiny dioramas and little miniature arcade machines that people had made. I don't know. That weren't even for sale. It was just like, look at this cool stuff that we made. Isn't it neat? And that event was the most crowded. Like, that's the first doujin event I went to where people were like shoving me, and I was like, what the fuck? Like literally shoving. So and I wasn't there for any, you know, it's one of those things where I tend not to get there early or like anything, because I'm not there for any specific like I have to get this thing or I'm
gonna, this
be
is
really
my favorite
upset
circle, and yeah, I've got to get like, there exclusive,
you know, like I'm like, all right, you know, I'm just here to sort of like observe and buy a few things, it'll be fun. So that was a little bit I mean, it wasn't like dangerous or something, but it was, I just feel as though even at American cons, you know, people tend not to directly shove you. So
what you're saying is if I go to certain fate events, if I ever go to Japan, I might end up in a knife fight.
I mean, well, you'd win, Al. Because the thing is that something that I feel like I observed for my own person was that people run into people all the time. Like, they just run into you. And no one thinks a thing about it. Like, nobody is worried that they're going to get in a fight. And that's the difference between Japan and America, is that in America, in New York, you don't run into people because that could start a fight. They're just not expecting you to have a problem with it. That's what it seemed like. Or like, you're gonna have a problem with it, but you're gonna keep it inside and you're not gonna react. And so like, so if you wanted to get in a fight, you would win it probably, because they would not, no, you'd have the element of surprise. Yeah, I just thought that was that's my interesting observation. Take it or leave it. Maybe it's totally wrong, but people ran into me a lot and it was just like, like, nobody even apologizes. Like, it's just like, no, this just happens because we're in like a city or whatever.
It was bumper cars. It's like, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. No, that's how they just bam. And they like, they're just like bumper. They're like those like toys, you know, that like, those like, that run, that like when they run into the wall, they just turn and go the other way. That's how it is.
One thing I'm curious about that you haven't mentioned, that you came at like almost the quiet before the storm, but how was the JoJo stuff there? Because I feel like, you know, not long after you came back was the announcement that we're getting Golden Wind. So I feel like people still care about JoJo's, but I feel like it's died down from the crazy pitch that it has been the last few years because of the longer hiatus between 4 and 5. But what was your...
Your interpretation is correct, Al. It, like, very, very, very little. I found a little bit of doujin, and that was kind of it. I didn't really see much JoJo presence. A little bit. Like, every once in a while, you'd, like, run into something. But, yeah, it was not... Like, it clearly had, like... Because it wasn't current, it was not showing as much presence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure now, already, it's probably already ramping up. People are so hype, including us people right here. We're hype. Because I did not want to go another year without JoJo, okay? We don't need that. We have too much, it's just too much hardship already.
Well, now you could see the story of Italian mob boys.
I'm not super looking forward to that, actually, but I'm still really excited. Like, I hate mob stuff, but... I feel as though I'm in good hands with Araki, so it's fine.
Let's remember, once you get to that, you can get to Stone Ocean.
That's right. I did bring back a flyer because they are having a JoJo art exhibit at one of the art museums in Japan in the fall. So they knew, because that's the same time as the anime comes out. So that should have been our hint that it was mere moments away. Okay, one random story and then one final big otaku thing. So one of the first things I discovered, I think like the second day I was there, woke up, it was fairly early, turned on the TV, and apparently they have like healing time on the TV, and it was just like a half an hour of cats playing and no humans, just silence, just cats doing stuff or being petted. So I guess there was human interaction there, but it was just... like, on the TV, just, like, relax you. And I was like, this could really make it big. I mean, this seems like this should be... I feel like people already do this for themselves. But if you just made it a channel, all bets are off. So somebody get on that right away. If that was a YouTube channel, like a live stream YouTube channel all the time, it would have the most hits.
So I have before you get to your big thing, Kate... I feel like one of the reasons we're not a more popular anime podcast and blog is because we don't talk about our passions enough, including food. So, Kate, people always want food talk. You ate a lot of food while you were in Japan, a lot of it good. Tell us a little bit about, you know, yummy food that you ate. Sure, that doesn't seem like an otaku thing, but I'm sure, like, there are just a bunch of people whose ears perked up the minute I mentioned this.
So I really tried this time to eat something different almost every day. So there were some repeats, But I did end up eating like a lot, just trying to like, you know, try to just take in as many different kinds as I could. But, and this is like not even a Japanese food, but I have to tell you guys about it. So in the basement of Knock No Broadway, there is an ice cream shop that has an 8-scoop ice cream, or it's like soft serve. So it's like 8 different servings of soft serve on a cone. You can only get it on a cone. You can't get it in a cup, and it comes like in a straight thing. And so like, you better share it with somebody or eat or whatever, but there's like, you know, if you drop it, it's over. But I had to do that. So that was super good and super fun, and it was super cheap. But it was like, I have like a picture of this massive ice cream cone.
Did God strike down your ice cream tower for its hubris?
Nope. We were able to polish that thing off. I mean, I think the thing that it worked because it was soft serve. Because if it was not, it probably would have been a disaster. Because, you know, like a harder ice cream would be really
take
hard.
More time and
yeah, I feel like that would have been hard. But with the soft serve, it worked. Highly recommend. It was very good.
What was your favorite of the 8 flavors?
There was a coffee in there that was very good. The green tea was pretty good. And it was really good when I, like, could mix. Because you could sort of, like, once you were getting down to one, you could then, like, combine it with the other one. The one I didn't like was, like, a melon soda one I didn't love. But otherwise, like, I loved everything. So, there was, like, a Sakura one. I think some of them are definitely like all year round, but it does change. So I think certain of the ones would be different if you went at different times of the 8 flavors. But it's like basically all the flavors they have at the time, you get one of all of them. So definitely recommend. And of course, Knock No Broadway, great place to shop. So it's a perfect, like, you're there, you need a break, just go to the basement and get that. I have to say that I think that I want more people to take me to get Om Rice places because it's like probably one of my favorite things to eat at this point. But the best one I have ever had is at Denny's. It's like so good because it's covered in not ketchup, but like that like gravy glaze stuff, and it's just so good. It's so good. I'm still thinking about it. It makes my mouth water thinking about it. So like, I would really like somebody to tell me where to get amazing Om Rice, because I actually felt like it was harder to find than you might think. And so I was like, I was often looking for it, and like it was almost one of those things where if I was looking for it, I wouldn't find like a place nearby that would have it. But if I wasn't looking for it, there's a place and there's a place and there's a place. I have to mention, because I didn't even talk about it, but I was able to go to Tokyo DisneySea this time. That's like its whole other, I could do a whole podcast about that. But the food, they're really known for like their food there, especially their popcorn flavors. So they have different popcorn flavors in different parts of the park. So like, and people are really into it. So like, you have to go to different areas just to get the popcorn flavors. So we had like curry popcorn and like garlic shrimp popcorn, and those were all really good. Also, there's like different churros all over that park. So we got like different churros, and there's like a shrimp bun that was so good. So yeah, like all the snacks we had there, super great.
Well, I can imagine is I went to Tokyo SeaWorld. What did you think of like the shows and the fish? Huh? What? I went there to eat.
yeah. I mean, everything else was great, but also the food. And actually, this leads in pretty well to my final story, because I also had some really great food at the Legend of the Galactic Heroes Cafe. So, as we know, Legend of Galactic Heroes on, you know, we're getting a retelling, I guess you'd call it. I also saw it quite a bit while I was there. And there's also a Isilorn Cafe, restaurant. And it really is not a cafe. It is a restaurant. You have to, you know, obviously all these places, you have to make a reservation. And we were lucky enough to have somebody help us do that. And, you know, it's a fancy restaurant, and it's there for a long time. So I think that's one of the reasons we were able to get in. It's there for like a year or something. And it's like wood paneling, you know, it's just like really like high class, and they greet you at the door for your reservation, and like they're kind of like talking to you in a very specific way because you had to tell them if you were Empire or Federation. And so like, you know, so then you sit in different parts of the restaurant, and they have all these different foods, and the menu is pretty massive. And so I, the thing I really wanted, which is basically exactly what should have been on the menu, which is Anna Rose's cake. You know, in the story, she makes this cake for Reinhardt and Kirkis, and like they talk about it like it is the just, you know, in their childhood memories, it's the greatest thing ever. And so I was like, well, they better have this cake on the menu. And they did, and it was really good. They did a great job with it. It's very theatrical. You know, everything that they did there, especially, like, certain things on the menu, they would come out and, like, do, like, a little, before giving it to you, there'd be, like, a little performance. And one of the things was, on the menu, it was just called Thor's Hammer, and basically, I don't even remember what it was, because we didn't order it, but luckily someone next to us ordered it, and they come out, and they're like, put this thing on the table, and then they like, shout, and then they like, have their, you know, like, what do you call it? Like,
blowtorch.
Like a blowtorch gun, and they're like, yeah, it's just, it's pretty great. It was really fun. They also have a section at the front of the restaurant where you can dress up as Yang and sit in a, and like obviously had to do that. It was the most important thing ever.
If you were on the Imperial side, do you get to like dress up as Reinhardt or something?
So there was only one entrance, and I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
There didn't seem to be a section that we didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you could, like, you know, when you're waiting for food, you just, like, get up and walk around. It wasn't, like, I mean, it was, there were plenty of people there, but it wasn't as if, like, someone's gonna, like, grab your
There wasn't one Fezzan table that was making sure that the two sides couldn't, pass over to each other.
Yeah, so, like, we were waiting for stuff, like, because there was original cells hanging around and such, so you were able to go around and take pictures, and obviously go take pictures as being Yang. So, yeah, I don't know if you were, like, I don't know if there's, like, maybe different days could be. Like, oh, if you're there on a different day, then you could dress up. Because the thing they did have was, like, they had, like, a frequent customer card. So, like, if you came multiple times, you could, like, get things. So it could be a thing where, oh, well, today you can dress up as Yang, but if you come again, maybe you get to dress up as Reinhardt or whatever. I definitely could see them doing that because the other thing is that, so for every drink you ordered, any drink, it could be a coffee or it could be liquor or whatever, they all had themed drinks, so you would get a coaster. And the best part about this coaster was you didn't know who it was going to be, and neither did the staff. So the staff would come over with this, like, little box of coasters, and they would pick it up, and they wouldn't look at it, and then they would lay it down flat on your table and not turn it over so that, like, you could turn it over. So we like, ended up getting a couple of those. But the girls next to us, who also got Thor's Hammer, which we were very grateful for, were, like, ordering tons of drinks, I guess, to get these coasters. Because you just didn't know what you were going to get.
Like, one of them was like, if I leave here and destroy my liver, God damn it, I'm getting, like, a Kirky ice.
Yeah. So there was, like, a lot of incentives, I guess. So this extended to the bathroom. So in the bathroom, the toilet paper, you could choose from Federation or Empire side. That's how far they went with everything. It was like expensive. I mean, it wasn't like cheap, but it also wasn't exorbitantly expensive. There was a entertainment fee for the table, but, like, again, it was only, like, 500 yen, which is, like, whatever. And, you know, yeah, it was just, like, a really fun thing to do and a unique thing to do. I mean, I think the terrifying thing is that if you lived in Tokyo, these are literally happening all the time. Because there was also, while we were there, a Cowboy Bebop cafe, which we couldn't go to, but, like, there's always one of these things happening, which would be horrible. I mean, in the best way, it would be horrible, but, like, you just like stumbling over them. I mean, they're happening everywhere. So once in a while, though, it's fun and fine to do and spend a little extra money to do it. So, like, how often is there going to be a Legend of Galactic Heroes restaurant, right? So, yeah, a very memorable, very special thing to do.
Did they play any Legend of Galactic Heroes music, as far as you could tell, while you were there, or if they did?
You know, I can't really remember. But the thing is, too, that I might also be mixing things up because I was hearing the new opening a lot in other stores we were in. So now I'm confusing whether or not they were playing stuff like that at the restaurant or not. So yeah, I mean, I could talk about this trip endlessly. I had such a great time. And, you know, of course, it just makes me want to go back again. And I spent way too much money, but it was all worth it. So I hope that I will be doing another podcast sometime soon where I have gone again.
That wraps up another Speakeasy podcast. Remember to visit ReverseThieves.com for all kinds of content to tide you over until the next episode.